Yud Gimel Shvat, Tuesday the 18th of January, Rabbi Yehoshua Posen, financial advice from the Chofetz Chaim.
Good morning. This week's parasha, it's well known, Yisri comes and sees his Eidim Moshe, and like any good Shvat, he's got lots of ha'aros on how he should be conducting his affairs better, differently. And Yisri points out that Moshe Rabbeinu's current system of being done Klal Yisrael, or providing a person to Klal Yisrael, consists of just Moshe Rabbeinu, a one-man show, so to speak. And the problem is, it's not fair on Moshe Rabbeinu, because it's not shy for one man to done the whole of Klal Yisrael, and it's not fair on Klal Yisrael because of the amount of time that they have to wait. And therefore Yisri comes up with a solution that Moshe Rabbeinu should train and bring in other Dayanim and Shoftim on different levels, and then after the very difficult kashas will come to Moshe Rabbeinu. At the end of the Yisrael's advice, he finishes off with the pasuk as follows. Yuches pasuk of Gimel, he says, "Im es hadavar hazeh tase v'tzivcha li him v'yachol tza'amet v'gam kol ha'om hazeh al mekoimo yovoi b'sholem." If tak you listen to my advice, then tak there'll be sholem in Klal Yisrael, things will work out okay. Chofetz Chaim asks the Shtaka Kasha. Fake the Chofetz Chaim, the Loshen of Yisri is strange. At the end of the Pasuk, Yisri says, so you do our Gemara at the end of Brochus, where the Gemara says, Daf Samudzalad, Omer Abin HaLevi, sorry, before that, Omer Abin HaLevi, Hanifte Michaveri, Al Yom Aloylech Bushalim, El Aloylech Lushalim. This is not referring to this pasuk. This is referring to after the snare, where Moshe Rabbeinu told Yisrael he has to go to Mitzrayim to carry out the shlichus of Kodesh Baruch Hu. So there, Tachi Yisrael said to him, "Leich l'shalim," and Olav Hitzliach. And with this bracha, Moshe Rabbeinu went, and he was Tachi Matzliach Klal Yisrael. On the other hand, David Shomer Leilav Shalim Leich l'shalim Holach Benitle. When David HaMelech used the lashon of Leich first Shalom, go in peace as opposed to go to peace, then things taka didn't work out so well. So says the Gemara, when a person parts from a chava, wants to say Leich l'shalom. Carries on the Gemara, V'omer b'avin ha'levi, ha'niftim in ha'meis, al yoyim alei Leich l'shalom, el Leich b'shalom. Shneim av'at yisor el avisecha b'shalom. So the Gemara clearly says, now there's a difference what language one uses when one is speaking to a chai and when one is speaking to a mis. If a person is speaking to a chava and he's giving him a bracha, so to speak, as a part, he should say Leich l'shalim. When a person is speaking to someone who's been nifter and, so to speak, saying his final goodbye, he should say Leich b'shalim. The main effect of Chofetz Chaim, it's difficult, before Yisrael, who himself is the makor for this halacha, it's difficult that Yisrael should use the loshen al mekom yavoy b'shalim when he's speaking about Klal Yisrael. It's not the Chofetz Chaim, Teres, which makes a lot of sense. He says, Yodua, that if a person has in their reshus money which they've stolen, or a chefetz which they've stolen or taken shalei kedin, whether they realize it or not, and they don't rectify it in their lifetime, then achamev esim, it's shayach that they have to come back to this world in a different gilgul in order to taka be masakan this chet, or the fact that they're still holding on to Yena's guilt. Memelas of the Chofetz Chaim, that's Poshup Shah and the Pasuk. Yisrael is saying to Moshe Rabbeinu, if you set up a proper system whereby it's shayach for all of Klal Yisrael to understand and have paskins for them whose money is whose, whether they have to pay back, whether they need to be paid back, then al mekoma yavo l'shalom achamer v'esrim, people, as they say in English, says we rest in peace, then al mekoma yavo b'shalom, meaning achamer v'esrim, Klal Yisrael taka won't have to have the disturbance and the trouble and the yisurim of having to rectify holding on to money which doesn't belong to them. With that in mind, I wanted to, it's called financial advice in the Chofetz Chaim. I think it's fair to say that in most Dinei Torah, I'd say 80% of Dinei Torah could be averted and avoided if people would sign a proper detailed contract beforehand. I say 80% because probably 10% of Dinei Torah are where it's not clear if the right work has taka been done or not been done, and probably the last 10% are when people are dishonest. But I'd say 80% of the interior is when there's a genuine misunderstanding between both parties, A, what was agreed, what was meant, and what was intended. The concept of writing a clear contract at the beginning, prior to an agreement, whether it's employment, whether it's a purchase, whether it's whatever, an investment, whatever it might be, the purpose is twofold. Number one, we find many, many masechtos of Gemaras that are written by the Amoraim, who had chiluki das of what the intentions were of the Tanoim, who they heard giving over the halachas. So if they could get different understandings and ideas as to what was actually meant, kavachome, when it comes to two people entering into an agreement, a verbal agreement, often one person thinks that the agreement is one thing, and the other person thinks the agreement is something completely different, and they might mamash both be 100% sincere in what they think their intention and what the agreement really was, or they might have had the same understanding at the time, but as time progresses, especially when a person's got their own negia of their own interests, then people's memory, you know, fades, and all of a sudden they become these differences and these arguments between shutzim or investors, whatever it might be. So the advantage of writing a proper contract is twofold. First of all, you have something clear in writing that cannot be refuted. And second of all, when one has to put things in writing, all of a sudden one stops to think about what are we actually putting in writing? What are the actual terms of this agreement between us? Now, unfortunately, sometimes people listen to the first part, they put it in writing, but they put it in writing themselves. Two parties, they sit down, they put a few lines in writing, they both sign it, and everything should be gewaldig. Unfortunately, it doesn't work out like that. The reason is because sometimes the words on the paper, you can translate both ways, and we'll come to an example in a minute, which seems to be coming up again and again, this kind of misunderstanding or difference of opinion as to what the agreement is. Whereas if they would go to a lawyer who has experience in this field, or to someone else who has experience in this field, and write a proper contract detailing all the different protim, then so much avos nefesh could be averted. I know two brothers that just started a shutus. They went to a lawyer, 16-page contract. You think, you know, Meshiga, brothers, Maisa Achim Shechalku is not a foreign concept. And this Matzias was sitting down and taking care of Rochel Bitzach Tana, exactly what happens if one wants to bring in his son, what happens if one... Everything, you know, every single angle can only be time and money worth investing. I'll give you a scenario which... This is one scenario I'm giving you, but I've had very numerous different types of examples around this framework. Reuven and Shimon want to come together as... I'm not even sure how to be mugged it yet, because I don't want to mislead anybody. Reuven, let's say, and Shimon find a property together. Reuven and Shimon find a property. Reuven is an investor. He invests money and he gets on with whatever he does in a day. Shimon is a property developer. He's going to sort out the finance, he's going to develop the property, and then they're going to sell the property. Reuven's going to put down £200,000, Shimon's going to arrange the finance in the bank of the other £800,000, there's going to be no personal liability on Shimon, the liability will be secure against the property, they're meant to develop it and sell it. Very, very everyday common scenario. On the contract which is signed, there are three lines. The first line says, Reuven is going to invest £200,000. Reuven's going to put up £200,000. Second line, Shimon is going to organize the funding and the development of the property. And the third line, they're going to split the profit 50-50. Now, if I had more than half an hour, I'd be very happy to go around the room and ask all of you how you understand this arrangement. But I've done it in a number of places before, and I have two very different understandings, normally dependent on what people do, what line of business people are in. The two different understandings, I'll tell you the understandings, and then who says what might depend on what goes wrong. The first understanding is, which to some, many of you might seem poshut, this is a richtige shutus. It's a proper shutus. They both own the property 50-50, they're going to split the property 50-50. It's a shutus. One partner is bringing the capital, the other partner is doing all the organization, and it's a richtige shutus. The second understanding is, and the reason why these might sound very similar is that's tackle how this misunderstanding can happen, because both of these fit the lashonis on the contract. The second understanding is that no, Reuven's putting down the money, it's Reuven's property, but he is prepared to give Shimon 50% of the profit. Now it's just like you pay someone a salary, instead of paying him a salary, he's giving him half of the profit for the work which Shimon is doing. Right? So the first option is it's a proper shutus. The second option is that the property is owned by Reuven. Now in this particular instance, by the way, the property was bought in a company where which was in Reuven's name, but that was mutually beneficial to both parties. That wasn't seen as being necessarily a right. It wasn't spoken out. It was agreed. It's going to be bought in a company that's in Reuven's name. So the question now is, what is the arrangement? Now what is the Nafka Minna? If we speak out the Nafka Minnas, I will have a better understanding of what these two different Sodom are. Because on paper, they both fit the terms on the contract. Reuven's investing the money, that's happening in both. Shimon's organising the financing and they're splitting the profits. Now, who tithes what could well depend on what happens next. Let's say what happens next is that Shimon gets the finance, they buy the property, they develop the property, they sell the property. But after they pay back the 800,000 loan from the bank and the interest owed to the bank, they only have £100,000 left. Out of the £200,000 which Reuven injected, they only have £100,000 left. What happens now? Who carries the loss of the £100,000 on this project? Now at this stage, if this is what happens, Reuven will probably turn around and say, this is a shutus. This is a shutus. You know, you were in it for half the profit. You're happy to take half the profit. Of course, it's poshut that you are chori on half of the loss. Like the Gemara says, ha'iska palga mova palga pikodin. Forget the fact here that Shimon wasn't paid for his work. Let's leave that out. But this is a shutus, and since it's a shutus, so you should carry half of the loss. Shimon will turn around and says, who said anything about shutus? I was doing the work. For the work I was doing, I was going to get paid half the profits. I was never mekabel upon myself any achrayus. Rather, from a legal point of view, if you have a contract which says in it purely that Shimon is going to get half the profit and doesn't say any mention whatsoever of any liability on Shimon, Shimon, from a legal point of view, has quite a case. It doesn't. Where does it say amachoy b'chol? So that would be the first nafka minna. The first nafka minna, which you would think is such a basic nafka minna, it should have been spoken about from the beginning. What happens if things go wrong? Now, very often, this does not get spoken out in the beginning. The only possible explanation I have is that people are very optimistic. You know, when you enter into agreements, there's going to be profit, there's going to be a lot of it, and how are we going to carve it up? Right? But people don't look. We're not going into this investment for a loss, so they don't speak about a loss. In fact, if you stop and ask them, what happens if things go wrong? In my experience, either they stop and think about it for a while, the taka not sure. The taka hasn't been discussed. So in this particular case, that would be one nafka minna. Now let's give a nafka minna, punkt faket, where each one will tie in the opposite. What happens if Reuven puts down the 200,000 for the exchange, and then a few days later Shimon's meant to start working on raising the finance for the completion, the 800,000. Then that night of the exchange, Reuven gets a phone call. A chav of his hears he's bought this property for £1 million. He's only exchanged the 200,000. He's prepared to buy it off him for 1.5. £1.5 million. Now, I'm not asking what happens if now Reuven comes to Rav and asks what he's meant to do. Let's leave that out for a moment. And just in order to keep things very simple and glatt, let's say that Reuven and Shimon found this property together. Now, Reuven goes ahead and takes the offer. He flips the property for 1.5, and now he calls up Shimon and says, by the way, I've sold the property. So what happens next? Now, there's £500,000, so to speak, profit, because the 800,000 they never actually borrowed, but that gets paid straight. There's £500,000 profit. What happens now with this £500,000? Now, all of a sudden, you can find him singing the opposite tune. Reuven will now be saying, listen here, this was never a shutus. This was never a shutus. This is my property. Hooray, it's in my company. It's my property. I was happy to pay you half of the profits that I would make if you would do the work. Lemaisa, I'm not blaming you that you didn't do the work, but I didn't need you to do the work. As things happened at this particular matzav, I didn't need you to do the work. So I'm very sorry. We'll come on to discuss briefly in a minute whether he was allowed to cut him out. Let's hold that for a second. But in a matzav where he has cut him out, and now there's no work that he's doing, and this is very important, Shimon hasn't started to do any work. Right? Shimon intended the next morning to go up, start calling up the banks and working on developing the finance that was required. But as of yet, nothing's happened. Nothing was required to have happened from Shimon. So then, Reuven will turn around and say, listen here, this is my property. I was going to pay you had I needed you to do the work. I'm cancelling you before you start any work. I don't need you to do the work. Mr. Shimon, the next property we get together, we'll have, you know, things will work out differently. And I have a good day. I'm keeping the whole £500,000. Shimon will now be singing the other tune. Shimon will be saying, one second, no, this was a shutras, we were doing this for shutras, and Shimon, I've had this scenario where Shimon is 100% posher to him, this is mamash a shutras. If it's a shutras, you bought it for both of us. If you bought it for both of us, because you now, I'm very happy to start work today on organizing the finance and everything else. You're saying now the shutras have muzzle, and we didn't even have to do this work. And you're just going ahead and flipped on behalf of the shutras. I was prepared to do my work. It's not like I didn't keep to my tonight. It's not even like I didn't keep to my tonight because of any onus that happened. I'm 100% mukhan to keep my tonight. You're saying, you know what, we don't need you. It's like two shittim being in the office, you know, meant to be there from 9 to 5, and one day they can close the office, you know, lunchtime. So the one who's meant to come in the afternoon doesn't have to come in today. Baruch Hashem, good muzzle. But you can't cut me out. When you bought this property, you bought it for both of us, and Shimon will claim that this is Tachay Shittus. I'm entitled to half the Rema, half the profit. That would be a second afkmina. So you can almost see how each way, and obviously if the first scenario of liability wasn't discussed, you can be sure that this isn't discussed. Right? What should be written in this contract is it should be written from the beginning, in other words, the two parties should sit down and discuss, is this a shutras, or is this what's called a profit share? Is it really that the property belongs to Reuven, and just he's prepared, the agreement is he's giving half of the profit to Shimon. That is not discussed. There's another nafkimina, the Gabi Rivis. We've discussed this once in the shroom in the past. What happens if, for example, it comes to developing this property, and now they can't get the right money from the bank, so they come to, Shimon calls up Reuven, so they bought the property, everything so far is good. And Shimon calls up Reuven, he says, Reuven, we need £20,000. So Reuven says, okay, I'll give £20,000, but I want to charge interest. My money currently is sitting in the bank, I want to charge the company interest. Now, we've mentioned before, and I'm not going to go through all the klolim and pratim now of when and how there is a problem, there isn't a problem, but briefly, if a silent partner, let's mount the palik, if a silent partner lends money to a partnership, he's not allowed to charge interest. There are chiluki deis if an active partner organizes money from a bank, which he then, like an overdraft, and he injects that into the company, whether he's allowed to take the interest fee from the company or not, that we've discussed, that's a different halacha. Nobody argues on the fact that if a silent partner lends money to a company, and especially if it's his own money, I'm not even talking about him getting an overdraft, even if you get an overdraft, it would be the same, but especially if he lends his own money to a company, he is not allowed to charge interest. Now, when is that? Why is that true? Why is not allowed to charge interest? Because a company, although legally a company might be a separate entity, in halacha, according to most poskim, a company is not a separate entity. Let me be clear, that does not mean that the limited aspect of a company is not recognized in halacha. Let's leave that for the moment. The limited aspect is a different point. But as far as a company being a separate concept and not a sum of the partners, in halacha, a company is pashtus or shutus. And since it's a shutras, with every pound which one partner lends to the company, he's lending 50p to himself and 50p to his shutuf. And on the 50p he's lending to himself, we haven't got a problem. On the 50p he's lending his shutuf, he's not allowed to charge interest. And therefore, a silent partner who lends his own or money he gets from a bank, it doesn't make enough gemina, into the partnership, he's not allowed to charge interest. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't ways possibly of restructuring this, but that in a straightforward, simple interest mode, method doesn't work. Now, in this particular scenario that we're discussing here, it will depend on the chakira. If you understand that this is a proper shutras, which is owned, this property is owned 50-50 by Reuven and Shimon, then Reuven is now not allowed to charge the company the interest, because he's charging Shimon, half interest being paid, has been paid for money that he has lent, so to speak, to Shimon. If you understand that this company is Reuven's company, Reuven owns this property, he is the bailiff on this property, he has agreed to pay half the profit, which is as a wage, half the profit to Shimon. Now, that means at the end of the day, once all the bills and everything else has been paid, he has to give half the profit to Shimon. What would happen if he took out this $20,000 from the bank and they had to pay the interest to the bank? That would be another expense which would obviously come off the top before Shimon would be able to work out how much profit he's entitled to. So as long as Reuven is not charging the company, which is himself, an abnormal rate, and as long as he's charging a normal interest rate from a from a Yasha's point of view, there's nothing wrong with me charging myself interest. If I am the sole owner of a company, I'm allowed to charge myself interest. Why I'm doing it for tax reasons, whatever it might be, that's irrelevant. But as far as halacha is concerned, I'm allowed to take money out of one pocket and pay it into the other pocket. So if I am the sole owner of a company, I'm allowed to charge myself interest. That affects the bottom line, how much profit Shimon will be getting. That's irrelevant. See, that's an expense. That expense was always going to be there the moment we realised that we had to borrow this £20,000. So therefore, Taka, in this scenario, whether or not Reuven is entitled to charge the interest, is allowed to charge interest to the company, well, depends on, in fact, what is the arrangement. Is the arrangement Taka a Shutus, or is the arrangement Taka that is owned solely by Reuven, and Shimon is getting paid a wage? He's come up with another similar scenario to this one, the same suffix, with another Nafkimina. Reuven owns a property portfolio, and he employs Shimon to come and manage his property portfolio. Shimon is very much there in the managing, and Reuven realizes that, you know what, why should I use Shimon's talents only for managing my property? Let's start managing other people's property, and we'll charge them for looking after their property. So at this stage, Reuven says to Shimon, let's open up a new company. The new company will be in my name, which again is agreed between them, not necessarily to be used as a riot as to what the agreement is. The new company will be in my name, and this company will be for managing other people's properties. Right? So the first company was Reuven's property portfolio, which Shimon managed. And the second company, which is going to function both at the same time. So for the work which Reuven does Shimon does in Reuven's company, is being paid a salary, and he'll continue to be paid a salary. And in the second company, it's going to be a property management company where they're going to manage properties from outside. Now, the arrangement is a little bit complicated, but the arrangement basically is that Reuven says to Shimon, listen here, any clients which I bring to this business, I get 60% of the profit, you get 40% of the profit. Right? Any clients which you bring to this business will split the profit 50-50. Right, so Shimon is going to do all the work. He's going to manage this company. And any clients which Reuven brings to the table, Reuven gets 60% of profit, Shimon gets 40% of profit. Any clients which Shimon brings to the table, they split the profit 50-50. And that is the arrangement, and that's how it goes, and it's very much siach. They manage various different properties. Now, what is this arrangement? You have the same kasha here that you had in the first scenario. What is this new company? Is this new company a shutus, which is owned 50-50 by both partners? Or is this company really Reuven's company, and he's paying Shimon a wage as well? Just instead of paying him a wage, a fixed salary like he did in the first one, now he's giving him a different share of the profits. Now what will be the nafkimina? The same nafkimina. What happens if one of the tenants turns around and he wants to sue the company? He wants to sue the company for negligence and not looking after the property properly. Right? Now, if this is a shutras, let's say, in this particular instance, this is what happens. Shimon, the person doing all the work, says, listen here, we're not paying him a penny. We weren't negligent. We can prove it. We'll fight it in person, whatever we want. We're not paying him. And Reuven turns around and says, no, listen here, I'm not interested in the hassle. We want to keep our good relations. We're paying him the money. He's asking for the money, how many thousands of pounds? We're going to pay him the money. Now, what's an nafkimina? An nafkimina is that, obviously, every pound you pay him is coming out the profits. In a property management company, the company is the profit. That's all there are. There aren't any assets. So, if you understand that it's Reuven's company, then Reuven's the bad boss. He makes all the decisions. Shimon doesn't have a say. But Edson, as long as Reuven lets Shimon make decisions, he can make decisions. But one day, Reuven walks in and says, this is the way it's going to be. There's nothing to talk about. If it's a proper shutus, like any other shutus, they can discuss what are we going to do. But what would happen? A different scenario. What would happen if Shimon wants to leave the company? Right, they worked there for how many years, and Shimon wants to leave the company, and he wants to take with him half the clients. Half the clients are in this company, he wants to take them with him. Now, we can't go through all the halachas of Anya Mahapaka Charora now, when it applies, when it doesn't. We have actually discussed it a number of years ago. But let's just say that if Shimon is an employee of this company, when he leaves the company, he is not allowed to actively take with him the clients. Now, there's nothing wrong with him going on his own and advertising in the free press that I'm starting up a company and these are my terms, very favourable terms, and if they decide to call him up, no problem at all. But he's not allowed to directly target them and take them out from the company A, which they're currently in, to try and bring him over with them. But that is only if he's an employee. But if he's stuck as a shutuf in the company, and the company is splitting now, so as a shutuf, they can decide how they're splitting the assets of the company. The assets of the company in this particular case are the client base. What else is there? That's all that the company really exists of. One more thing which the company exists of is what happens if they want to sell their share of the company. So in other words, now this will depend who and what. If Shimon wants to sell, let's say Shimon wants to leave the company, but he wants to sell his shareholding in the company to somebody else. But if he doesn't have a shareholding in the company, he's got nothing to sell. You want to walk, you can walk, but you don't have anything here. If he's like a 50-50 shutuf in a company which has an existing client base, and let's say he's not taking any clients, he's retiring, then he can try and sell his half of this company. Now, he might not get so much, because without him in the company, it might be a completely different story. But at the end of the day, he has bailus, he has certain bailus in this company. Akaponim. This is just mamish a very small simon ledava of the kinds of differences of understanding, basic differences of understanding from the beginning in an arrangement that one can have. And if one doesn't clarify these points at the beginning, then poshut, one's putting oneself at risk. Now the reason I said that this is advice from Chofetz Chaim is because the Chofetz Chaim says in Avos Chesed that when two people make an arrangement, you should speak out all the points very clearly at the beginning. The classic scenario would be you jump into a taxi in Eretz Yisrael, he doesn't put it on the monet, he drives out along, he gets to the end, he says, 50 shekel. He says, well, 50 shekel, it's 30 shekel, it doesn't have to be 50, it should be 30. And you continue to have this discourse. What happens at the end? Normally one of two things. Either you're going to pay the 50 because you're too scared to, you know, stick to your gun, so to speak. Or you're going to pay the 30 and leave the taxi thinking, oh, I showed him. You know, didn't let him take me for a ride. Now, what tucker is the... what's tucker the outcome here? There's a choice, one of two things. There's a Chofetz Chaim. If I pay 50 and I'm not really prepared to pay the 50, I just feel I don't have a choice, then possibly he's over on Geneva. The alternative side is even worse. If I pay only 30 and he really charges 50 and that's his price, then apart from being over Geneva, you're over on a common number of lavim for not paying wages, not paying wages on time. So look what's going on here, how much could be so easily averted by fixing at the beginning. How much are you going to know? Obviously the easiest thing, put it on the monet. But if you're not putting it on there, the easiest thing, how much is this trip going to be? Then you can do all the haggling and get that out of the system. And now you know what you're holding. Now you know what
you're
holding. Pardon? That's a separate discussion. But that's this kind of thing, and it happens the whole time. It happens in employment, it happens in investment, it happens in shutus. Now these things where people make the mistake of thinking that, well, I trust him, you know, why should I trust him? Now Maisa, the Gemara says, in Bab Nasir, the Ein Hema base, Omar of Yodah Marav, Kol Mish Yesh Le Mois, Umal V'Oistun Shaloi Be'edim, Oivu Mishuv Yifnei Eve Leisit In Mechshul. If a person lends without having Eidim, without having some raya as to the fact that he's actually lent the money, he's even a lav of lifnei eved sitting mirshul. Now, this itself could be a whole shiur on why type of people are making on this. A number of peskim and achronim who explain possibly to try and be matzik why we're not so makbid on tzaka lending money, and every time we lend mamish £20, £10, we don't ask people to write a shtar. But less mandapalik that lechachila, the best thing to do, is tzaka to write a shtar. Those peskim who explain this gemara are trying to explain why we're not over on a lav. Everybody agrees that this concept of not putting a person, Rashi says, why are we over on lifnei? Because there's Rashi, shayla al rucha ishaleva lechalichbo, you're putting him in a position where if he denies the borrowed the money, then, you know, there's a problem. Now, Be'ezim, these agreements, whether it's whatever type of agreement it is that are verbal, you have people owning properties in other people's names without a single piece of paper or aiding to back it up. You have chahena v'chahena. I cannot tell you how many times I come across this in a week. And the Meister, first of all, Posha asks Lifnei Eved. Is Posha wrong? Second of all, if Chas v'Shalom somebody's nifta without the right recording, then what's going to happen? The Yoshim are going to know whether it is their father's property, isn't their father's property. And then when it comes to just the basic understanding as to what the agreement really was, even when both parties agree that there was some form of agreement, but what in fact was the agreement? You can save yourself so much hassle and avas nefesh by writing things down clearly, and mamish covering yourself from the beginning.